Welcome to Law You Should Know. The law affects every aspect of our lives, our home, our jobs, and our recreational activities. Now you can learn about the law and how to protect yourself against the loss of your liberty or property. Learn how to stand up for your rights and seek compensation when you have been wronged. Your host for Law You Should Know is attorney Kenneth J. Landau with the Mineola Law Firm of Shane, Dock, Stanisi, and Corker. He's a member of the Committee on Professional Ethics of the Bar Association of Nassau County and counsel to the Nassau Academy of Law. And now, here is your host for Law You Should Know, attorney Kenneth J. Landau.
Hi, this is Ken Landau, and welcome to Law You Should Know. Today we'll be discussing preventing and reporting sexual harassment. It's a very popular topic in the news and a very important one. And my guest is attorney Jeffrey Ettinger, and he's a partner with the firm of Schwartz Ettinger, located in Melville, Long Island. Jeff, welcome to Law You Should Know.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's a pleasure being here.
And, of course, everyone's heard about sexual harassment. It's been in the news a lot lately, and I know that you and your firm represent employers in all types of employment litigation, including preventing and responding to sexual harassment claims.
Correct.
So what exactly is considered by the law to be sexual harassment?
In its simplest terms, sexual harassment is unwanted sexual advances by a coworker, employer, or supervisor. Obviously, it takes on many different forms under the law, but that is the most basic element of a sexual harassment claim.
And can it just be like a comment or remark, or there must be some kind of physical component?
It can be a comment or remark, but under the law, to establish what they call a prima facie case of sexual harassment, you have to establish what they call severe and pervasive conduct, which means if it's an off comment or a one-time incident, unless it's severe, it's not actionable under the law. Now, that doesn't make it right, and somebody could certainly bring a claim, but to be able to establish and pursue that claim, it would need to be severe and pervasive.
So it's just some kind of comment about someone's dress that someone doesn't appreciate, that would not be enough?
Generally, if it was one comment, one time, it probably would not be enough to establish a claim under the law. But if it's consistent or more drastic, it would be.
Okay, and why is it important for employers to try to prevent it, these types of complaints?
There are a myriad of reasons why it's critical for the employer. First and foremost, they must protect themselves from potential exposure and liability. The liability for a sexual harassment claim where an employer does not take appropriate action is very significant. The second reason is for the morale of your staff and in general to protect your employees from unwanted advances and harassment in the workplace. It leads to unproductivity. It leads to a lot of creative problems. And obviously, it's really bad precedent, reputation and otherwise, for an employer to allow sexual harassment to exist in their workplace.
And becomes a big distraction and could be costly and hurts their brand image.
Could be all of those things, and if it's not handled correctly, most likely it's going to get worse and it's going to cause more problems for the employer. And you're right, if it becomes a matter that the rest of the staff knows about, it creates a myriad of different problems for the employer.
And what can an employer do to try to discourage it or prevent it?
Well, the first thing and most important thing that an employer needs to do is have appropriate training. You need to have an employee handbook, which outlines what sexual harassment is, and you need to have, to the extent you can, employee training on what is sexual harassment. There are a lot of companies that give lectures or audio tapes, videotapes that they can provide to their employees to show them what is and is not sexual harassment. And it's also very important to have a procedure in place for reporting and investigating sexual harassment claims. So an employee who has been sexually harassed knows that they have some place to go to report what has happened and that the employer will take appropriate steps to investigate the matter and handle it appropriately.
And do they, is it usually the superior of the person who's doing it, or is it usually some isolated department who's may not be buddy-buddy or may not automatically support the person who's creating the problem?
Well, sexual harassment can come in all different forms. It can be by a coworker, it can be by a supervisor, it can be by an owner. Obviously, it's more severe when it's conducted by a supervisor or an owner, but under all circumstances, the employer has an obligation to investigate the matter and handle it accordingly.
Can it happen to or by an outside, let's say a customer or a subcontractor or independent contractor?
It gets very complicated with that, but the law does state that the employer has an obligation to protect its employees from harassment in the workplace, regardless of where it comes from. So obviously, if it comes from a client or a vendor, it has to be handled differently. But the employer cannot simply say, it's not my employee, I don't control them, so therefore I cannot get involved.
And are those people also protected from harassment?
Yes, absolutely. Clients, vendors, third parties have the right to come to your workplace to work with you in a manner that does not create problems for them. And you have a similar obligation if a client or a third party makes a complaint about one of your employees to investigate the matter and handle it, or you could face liability from that third party.
Are there also federal or state agencies that investigate these problems?
Yes. What people have to understand is that every level of government, there are agencies that are there to protect employees from all forms of discrimination. If you live in New York City, there's the New York City Council. If you New York State, the New York State Division of Human Rights. Under federal law, it's the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, and most counties, Nassau and Suffolk included, have commissions established to protect employees from harassment. And what those different agencies will do is they will investigate the claim free of charge to the employee, and if they find probable cause to proceed, the matter will go, in many cases, to an administrative hearing, in which case a judge could issue damages. And in most jurisdictions, the person can have legal counsel free of charge.
And if, regardless of those findings, can someone also bring their own lawsuit?
Yes. Well, there are specific procedures in place for how you can file lawsuits. In federal court, you have to go to the EEOC first, and they give you what's called a right to sue letter, which then allows you to go to federal court. You can go immediately to state court and file an action under New York state law, but you cannot have what they call an election of remedies, which means that you would go both to the Division of Human Rights and to state court. You have to choose one or the other.
Does it sometimes come down to a matter of credibility, you know, between what person says they heard and what the other person says they said?
Well, ultimately, within any case under the law, the ultimate fact finder is either a jury or a judge, so it becomes an element of credibility and proof. Obviously, if there's tapes, if there's emails, or if there are witnesses, it certainly enhances the claim brought by the employee. But if it's just the employee and the supervisor or the owner, it could be a question of his word against hers, and it's a question of what the jury believes.
And if an employee, if someone, I realize you represent employers, but the employee feels that something crosses the line, should they complain early and often?
The reality is that it's very challenging for an employee because there's a lot at stake for them. But the best thing they can do, if the company has an appropriate procedure, is they should report all acts of discrimination and harassment at an early stage, even if it's minor. Because what they want to do is establish that what's happening to them is wrong and allow the employer to investigate the matter and hopefully reprimand the party that is committing the harassment so that it stops before it gets to the point where it becomes so uncomfortable and awkward that it becomes a corrosive workplace.
And if the employer does react, will that be some kind of defense to them, even if
yes.
the action continues or escalates?
Well, it all depends on what the employer does. Now, if it's a co-employee that's on the same level or below you in employment, if the employer commences a proper investigation, they can be immunized from liability. If it's a supervisor or owner, the employer is responsible for the acts of those supervisors or owners. So as a result, they may be liable either way. But the better that the employer investigates the matter and handles it and takes appropriate action to stop the harassment, the less likely they are to be liable for the acts.
And does the investigation, can it be just... What level of investigation and is sufficient, and who conducts that?
Totally depends on the circumstances of each case. Ideally, you'd like to have a dedicated human resources person in your office to conduct the investigation, which could be interviewing witnesses, taking documents, ultimately deciding what happened, reaching a conclusion, and making a determination with management. If it's a very serious worm, they should hire an outside agency, either a law firm or a specific company that handles these type of complaints, and allow them to do an independent investigation and issue a finding. And generally with that finding, they make a recommendation as to what should be done, which would include either education, reprimand, or even termination.
And they'll be protected if they follow the recommendations, because, you know, then do they just open themselves up to a wrongful discharge lawsuit from the person who's being let go because of it?
Well, there's risk on all ends for the employer, but there's a thing under the law called retaliation, which means that if I bring a sexual harassment complaint to my employer or to an outside agency, and then my employer takes negative action against me as a result of my claim, that I can file a claim against them for retaliation. It's almost like a whistleblower claim. So there's risk on both ends. But yes, if the employer takes action against the harassor, obviously there's potential risk there. But they have to make an assessment of the claim, the value of the claim, the credibility of the claim, the evidence that's presented, the severity of the claim, and they have to make a judgment call. In many cases, the employer will choose education and reprimand over suspension or termination. But if it's a severe case and it's proven to be accurate, the right decision for the employer is they have to immediately terminate the employee.
And will the investigation look for patterns, even if there were no complaints, just to substantiate one side or the other?
It certainly could. Ultimately, you're looking for credibility of the complainant. So if there are other complainants or there are other issues with this particular employee, they should take that into consideration.
And if someone is applying for a job or wants to research their company's policy of protections against sexual harassment or track record in dealing with it, are there ways they can do that?
It's a little challenging. In most of these are not public records. If they've been sued, obviously you can do an internet search and pretty much find anything you need on a certain company. But the complaints with the EEOC and the Division of Human Rights are not a matter of public record unless you did a specific Freedom of Information request, which most people cannot do. You can obviously ask in an interview if they have an employee handbook, if they have a human resources department, things of that nature. But unfortunately, there's risk with any type of job, but you don't know what you're walking into.
Do people sometimes post blogs about these kind of things?
Absolutely. I mean, the way that the world is now, you can find out a lot of information about your prospective employer or your present employer by looking at that. But you have to keep in mind that a lot of people who enter those blogs are old employees, ex-employees that do not have a good rapport with their employer and they're looking to hurt them. So they're going to say some things which may not be accurate.
And this is a slightly different issue, but I'm sure you have to deal with it. Can someone post a complaint on social media and be protected for doing so, especially if they don't do it from their workplace computer?
Most likely, yes. There are First Amendment rights. The NLRB actually has issued many decisions on employee protection of the First Amendment rights, but there are limits to that in terms of your right. It has to be from your personal, and you are an employee of the company. So in some ways, you have certain loyal obligations to the company to not make false statements and things of that nature. So there's risk on both sides, but you are protected, and some of those protections are backed by legal precedent.
Okay, I would just like to take a short break now. When we continue our discussion, we'll talk about lessons that can be learned from what we've heard about sexual harassment claims at Fox News and other procedures in making or investigating or resolving complaints about sexual harassment. We're talking with Jeffrey Ettinger, and he's a partner in Schwartz Ettinger, a law firm in Melville, Long Island, New York. And you're listening to Law You Should Know here on 90.3 WHPC and also over the internet at ncc.edu/WHPC. We'll be back in a moment.
This portion of programming on WHPC is brought to you on behalf of the Nassau County Bar Association, who wants you to know about ADR, Alternate Dispute Resolution, which can help you avoid costly, lengthy, and uncertain litigation in court. By resolving disputes through mediation or arbitration, it gives you control over who decides your case. A mediator helps all parties to reach an agreement they can live with, or an arbitrator selected by the parties hears and decides the case. Your attorney can still represent you, but you control who decides your case. ADR is fast and less stressful than fighting in court, and it is a great way to resolve divorce, employment, or commercial disputes. ADR is now offered through the Nassau County Bar Association. Find out more about how ADR can help resolve your dispute by calling 516-747-4070 or visit nassaubar.org.
Once again, we continue with Law You Should Know. From the Mineola Law Firm of Shane, Doc, Stanisi, Corker, and Sauer, here is attorney Kenneth J. Landau.
Hi, this is Ken Landau, and welcome back to Law You Should Know. We're talking about sexual harassment in the workplace, and our guest is Jeffrey Ettinger. He's a partner with Schwartz Ettinger, a law firm in Melville, Long Island, that handles sexual harassment and all other issues from the framework of employers. And Jeff, you were telling us about the different elements of sexual harassment and what an employer or employee should do if they think they're involved in it or they're aware of it. Is it something that can be very subjective and cultural? People from other cultures or may have different personalities, may be very sensitive or less sensitive to some type of sexual harassment?
It certainly can be, but that's where the employer has to be very cautious. And if you were in an employee setting, you have to be very cautious with your words and actions, because what's going to offend one person, what's going to be a joke for one person, is not a joke for another person.
Or a negative comment.
Right, negative comment, a compliment that you think is a compliment is actually something that makes someone very uncomfortable. And what I always tell people is the workplace is a different environment than every other aspect of your life. And when you go to work, you should be neutral, you should treat people with respect, and you should always be cautious about your approach to other people. And it's the no fun zone somewhat, where people say, well, I can't tell jokes, I can't send emails. And I always tell war stories about the number of times where people were joking around and it was probably funny, and then something negative happened in the workplace, and all of a sudden all those emails live forever, and they have to answer to some of the things that they've done, and they simply can't.
And does it have to be, in terms of sexual harassment, does it have to be a verbal comment? Or can it be in an email or a text that someone sends even to a third person?
Well, it certainly is. It can be in an email. And I've told the story many times of a client who had a supervisor who sent a sexual joke to a coworker that they had traded a lot of emails over the years, but things went negative and she brought a claim against the company. And this email was fairly graphic. And I said to the client, you will not be able to recover from this email, because that's going to be Exhibit A at trial.
And if someone's telling someone a story about their weekend escapades and the person is an unwilling audience, mm-hmm. is that implicitly could be, you know, some kind of sexual harassment?
Absolutely. It's any kind of sexual context that makes people uncomfortable in the workplace. Now, obviously, each case is subjective, and a judge or a jury could determine that that's not sexual harassment, but they certainly could, and they certainly have in many cases. So again, people have to be very cautious with their approach. They get comfortable with people that they work with. They do and say things that they just simply should not do, and those things are very hard to explain years later at a deposition or a trial, that people are joking around and she knew I was joking around and we're friends. No one on a jury or a judge wants to hear that at that point.
And what lessons can we learn from the allegations at Fox News for victims, for employees, for others?
Well, what we learn as a culture is how scary sexual harassment can be when it's at the level at the top. When the owner, high-level directors are creating egregious acts of sexual harassment, the employees feel exceptionally helpless, because although you have legal recourse, you're putting your reputation, your job on the line, and you can get blackballed in your industry. And a lot of people simply do not want to put themselves out there like that. So they almost accept sexual harassment as a workplace requirement, and it's so inappropriate. So what we learn as an employer is, it's always going to come back to you. Even if you're able to settle it with lawsuits or put it under the rug, make excuses for it, at some point, even the biggest company, even the biggest players, they will get caught in the wash, and it will create huge problems for them personally and professionally.
If someone's a bystander, they're not the victim themselves, is it good for them to report something, and should they be encouraged by employers to report something?
Absolutely. The idea is that everyone should feel comfortable coming to work, men, women, people of all different genders, races, national origins. And if you see something that you believe is inappropriate for the workplace, you should report it.
Even if it doesn't directly involve you.
Yes, with the idea that you're trying to create a good workplace for everyone and that the employer should know about it and should be able to take steps to rectify it before it becomes a bigger problem.
And perhaps you're trying to help the employer avoid a bigger problem or help the person you think is being victimized.
I think both. I mean, the employer definitely should know and needs to know, because if they can handle it at the smaller level, it does not blow up and become a bigger problem. But for the employee, they have to understand, and some people have to get an education as to what's right and what's wrong and what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. And the sooner they get that, the better off everyone will be, because at some point they're going to cross a line that they cannot uncross. And you want to get to them before they cross that line.
And the legal standards that you've mentioned, do they apply in law in offices of any size?
Well, under federal law, you have to have 15 or more employees to bring a claim under what they call Title VII, which is a Civil Rights Act. Under state law, you need 4 employees, but under local law, you do only need 1. So there's always going to be some place you can go to address your concerns.
And in terms of litigation, what might some of the elements of damages be to a plaintiff?
If someone can adequately prove they were sexually harassed, they're entitled to compensatory damages, which is the amount of money they lost if they left the job or they were terminated. They're entitled to emotional damages, which is the essentially pain and suffering they had as a result of the harassment. And if the jury determines that the acts were deliberate and intentional, they could be entitled to punitive damages. And a key element also is under federal law, you're entitled to attorney's fees.
And if they left first but then claim they were forced to because of the harassment, they can
absolutely
make that claim later on.
Absolutely. So the damages are real, and they could be in many cases severe, especially if punitive damages comes into play.
And do companies have insurance coverage that will help them pay the defense costs or pay any claims?
They can. It's called employment practices liability insurance, and most larger size companies have it. But some companies have a large deductible. But in most situations, insurance will not cover intentional acts of wrongdoing. So any punitive damages claim or finding would be on the employer.
Do you recommend that employees and companies get this kind of coverage to help them?
I do. And it doesn't mean that gives them an excuse not to do proper investigations or to give sexual harassment training. But what it does is there are many cases of discrimination, harassment, where an employer will bring a claim as an excuse for getting terminated. And unfortunately, with every law where there's great intentions in the law, people sometimes take advantage of that law. And this law is no different. There are many cases where people have not been discriminated against. They've not been harassed. But they say after the fact that they were, because they're looking for money. So the employer needs to protect themselves from that. And it allows them to make appropriate employment decisions without the risk of hundreds of thousands of dollars coming out of their pocket.
And sometimes they'll help educate, you know, employees too, and encourage best practices.
Sure. Well, in insurance companies, everything is based upon their premium is based on a lot of factors, such as prior claims, such as employee handbook, such as training. So the more the employer can show that they're doing things properly, the lower their premiums will be.
We only have a few minutes left in the show, but in terms of resolving complaints, are they sometimes resolved through mediation or arbitration?
The reality is,
or negotiation?
95% of all employment law claims, especially sexual harassment, settle before trial. There's a lot of risk. It's a lot of time. And truthfully, both sides get bloodied quite a bit in a claim. A lot of allegations are made. A lot of people have to be called. It's a huge disruption of the workforce. Settlement is usually the preferred method, and usually it's through some form of mediation. Now, in this context, arbitration is rare, because if you're not going to settle, the plaintiff would like their day in court, their right to an appeal, their right to have their case heard before a judge, and you lose that in arbitration.
Well, sometimes you can have a high-low agreement, which will give you some recourse. Although you lose some of those rights.
You certainly can, But one, a high-low in an employment setting is generally not preferred because it's kind of hard to determine the level of damages. But you're right. You, in many cases, lose your right to an appeal, which in some cases you need.
But many claims are mediated.
I would say, like I said, about 95% settle before trial through mediation. Now, fortunately, the federal court system has a mediation process where you can go to a magistrate judge and they'll help you settle these cases for free.
And if the employer is being sued, what are the elements that the best elements of their defense they can put forward?
Well, they have to, one, obviously prove that the harassment did not occur. If somebody was terminated, they can show that they were terminated for reasons other than harassment or a complaint that they made. A lot of times people just are poor workers. They don't show up for work. They're late. They do a poor job and they're terminated. And then after the fact, they'll file a claim for discrimination or harassment.
On the flip side, can they also say they entertained the complaint, they investigated it, they tried to resolve it as best they could?
Well, certainly if the employer can show that they did a proper investigation, issued a proper finding, it certainly helps mitigate the employer's damage. But again, if the act of harassment was by a supervisor or owner and a jury determines that there was actual harassment, the fact that they investigated the claim is only going to go so far.
Any other final tips that you would offer employers, owners, or employees?
The one thing I would say to employers is the bury your head in the sand approach that many employers have had or like to have in the present doesn't work anymore. You need to be proactive. You need to realize these claims are real. There's huge exposure. There's huge risk. And again, the effect on your workforce and really your bottom line are massive. And you need to get in front of these things. You need to really educate your employees on sexual harassment. You need to have appropriate policies in place. You need to have people within your company that understand the law so they can handle the claims appropriately. And in most cases, it will save the employer a tremendous amount of time, money, and aggravation down the line.
Does the employer almost need a zero tolerance policy?
No, I mean, you have to be pragmatic about these things. Certain things, of course, are a zero tolerance policy, but you're not going to fire somebody because they make one off comment or send an inappropriate email. You need to educate, and you need to realize that sometimes people are great people, great workers, and they make mistakes.
Okay. I wish we had some more time, but I'd like to thank our guest, Attorney Jeffrey Ettinger of Schwartz Ettinger in Melville, New York. Keep in mind, whatever you've heard is presented as information only. You must get, whether you're an employee or an employer, you must get legal advice from your own attorney based on your own factual situation. You're listening to Law You Should Know here on Law You Should Know on 90.3 WHPC and also over the internet at ncc.edu/WHPC. And most shows have podcasts available by searching WHPC on iTunes. Please join us next week at the same time for another program on Law You Should Know.